There you go.
Hey! Welcome to the show. Pre-show, my friend Nick Jones is joining us.
Hey, how are we all doing?
You should just put on that accent for the whole show. Yeah.
What accent?
How y'all doing now?
I didn't even notice I did that.
there was a little Pittsburgh in there, too.
I have a terrible Pittsburghese accent.
Nick met a friend of mine that we met through our mutual friend Jonathan. He is my dungeon master. He also went to the Firkin Fest. We can talk about that.
Oh yeah, that was a good time. Won Steel Panther concert tickets. It's a good show. Missed out.
Not my kind of thing. So, well, I guess let's talk about first the Firkin Fest.
Okay, yeah, so let's tell Nick about what he's drinking.
Oh, okay, yeah,
for the listeners at home, these will all sound very familiar. These are beers we've had recently that I still have in the fridge with the Xylus stopper on top. And we're starting off with Weyerbacher Decadence, the 10th anniversary. This was brewed in 2005, so it already has 8 years on it. And it is, think a barley wine, but with cardamom in it, so there's a nice spicing to it. And last week when we had it, it was...
I'm a real sipper. It's a caramel, it's a toffee. Really taste the cardamom in there.
Yeah, it's very smooth, though.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it's like 10.3%.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell.
So buckle up.
Well, I guess it's good I ate hot dogs and rice for dinner.
Okay, so the Firkin Fest, was that your first beer festival?
It was, actually. Yeah, it was, because I wouldn't really be the type to go pay $50 mm-hmm. to go.
Yeah.
I don't really have that money lying around, let alone 21 was only in December, so little youngin.
Okay. Dungeon mastering doesn't pay well?
No, I'm actually in school for my waitering degree. I'm a jazz studies major.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, so nothing really pays too well.
But, I like the waitering degree.
That's all it is.
Good way to put it. Yeah, we're so far out of it. You know, Jeff and I are in our extremely late 20s, as I like to say.
you're in late denial. 16s on the 20s.
So yeah, education has long since passed.
Oh, yeah.
Us by. Oh. We can do continuing education. Are we holding up for that yet? Qualify?
Just what you can read on Wikipedia.
But actually, yeah, Nick, you're soon to be moving on to bigger and better.
If that's what you call Youngstown, then yeah.
Well, your education purpose.
I'll finish out there. I'll probably be out there for about 2 years. I also got a teaching job out there, which is nice. So, oh, it pays well. I got a nice apartment set up. Everywhere else looks run down, but.
So, how do you teach jazz? Isn't that something you just feel?
You know, you just put on some Pat Martino and you just go at it. No, it's my lessons. I don't even play jazz when I teach because that's just it, basically whenever you go to a college for school of music, it's like, all right, you have your choice, classical or jazz. You don't really get to choose rock because it's a preset from those. Mm-hmm. It just derives from that. Same exact thing with, like, unless you go to a specialty school, which are pretty much ridiculous and they cost like $80,000 a year or whatever, then you're stuck with those two choices. Jazz studies is a perfect combination of performance and composition because that's what mm-hmm. I hopefully like to do in the end. But at least get onto a cruise ship or something like that. That'd be amazing.
Well, I mean, think about one of the things that we talk about on the show often is TV shows, films, but more often than that, TV shows. And one of the least noticed but often most effective things in TV shows is scoring. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of people who are making names for themselves scoring, and it's becoming a more and more present thing. And so that's something you could...
Yeah, there's many different options doing. For it. What I actually intend to do is go straight on through grad school. Like I said, I have 2 years to finish up because I went to community college first due to lack of insufficient funds. If that's
not a bad thing.
I
mean, it used to be a pockmark, but I don't think it's a pockmark anymore. Especially
a lot of people do it now just because it saves you so much money. And so that's where that comes from. But going straight on to grad school, and then I basically bust to get a 4.0 as I can to try and get a free PhD out of it is the intended long-term goal. But there's many different options. If
Doctor
you get,
of Jazz.
Oh, yeah, it's great. But if
well,
you get...
I mean, think about,
well, the thing
think
is
about
though,
this.
You can't get
hey,
universe.
Everybody. You say, hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Dr. Nick.
Well, no. The thing about it, though, that sucks is you can't... I want to get a teaching job, mm-hmm. and unless I actually go to school for, like, music education or something like that, I can't really teach. I can teach at a university level with a master's degree. However, most universities won't even look at you now unless you have your PhD in
yeah,
music.
We were talking about this last week a little bit, about how, you know, the job market, you know, there's, like, too much... I want to make sure I don't mischaracterize this the way I'm saying it, but the gist is, you know, there's not enough PhD level jobs and too many PhDs. So they're applying, like the one example was a guy was had a bachelor's and he was applying for a research position at a university and he was competing against PhDs for this entry level research position. And so everyone's getting pushed down the ladder a few rungs and, yeah, so you have to over-educate to get those jobs now, which is...
That's what it's come down to. Like, they say you only need a master's to teach at a university, but they won't look at you unless you have a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can find a lot of universities that'll help pay for it. Like, they'll take pay cuts from you and finish out your schooling or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same exact thing with a performance degree. They're absolutely useless because I can go and apply to, say, like a pit orchestra in New York City or something like that, or to a cruise ship. Am I going to get even the interview? Probably not, because they're going to see someone with the education. I might still be the better player, but I'm still considered amateur.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, I'm going to get an interview with mm-hmm. my degree.
Yeah,
then when it comes down to it, it's just your ability to play.
That's the way it works in our industry, too. After a certain point, experience starts doing the talking, but for like the first 6 or 7 years, your degree gets you in the door.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while,
it's your credibility
yeah,
and your experience
yeah.
behind it. So that's the downfall of it. You pay all this money just for, hi.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Nick in 10 years after he's been stuck on a cruise ship for like 5 years in a row and see if he's still, if that's still where he's striving to get to.
Oh my God. But they pay so well.
Oh, I'm sure.
And not to mention that you don't have a rent. You don't have a car. You don't have, all you pay for is your phone. You get free meals and free room for as long as you're there. You make so much money.
And you get to sit around and sick all day.
Yeah.
You picked the right one.
It's great. And you eat lobster tail every night.
Mm-hmm. The love boat.
Am I supposed to continue talking?
Yes.
All right.
When you're supposed to talk with you want to talk.
I was sipping.
Oh, I try not to talk with...
We don't worry about that error in the pre-show. I don't have any notes for this week. I didn't think to write anything down that caught my attention.
Well, Nick's here. Nick should catch your attention. Let's talk about the Firkenfest.
Yeah, let's. If I can remember any of the drinks that I had.
Well, yeah, I forgot to bring the little thingy that had the stuff on it.
Yeah.
I should have.
That's at Michal's.
So one thing that I noticed about the fest. Now, like I said, this is your first. I've been to several. This was, there were plenty of very good beers being poured. They were all at a cask, so it was slightly different than your normal beer fest where it just had a keg, so they'll be righteously carbonated as opposed to these which were barely, if any. However, the difference in this festival was, yeah, so it was Firkens, it was more rare beer, but it was also extremely crowded.
The crowd was ridiculous. It actually turned me off on it because they picked a horrible location.
Yep.
They should have made it you weren't big enough for, say, the convention center downtown. But that was definitely would have been a reasonable size for the convention center in Monroeville. That Highmark place was horribly located.
Yeah, well, what we learned afterwards is that they thought they were going to have the entire upstairs. But you know how some of that was built out? Like, there were mm-hmm. the bathrooms and stuff? That was supposed to... The floor plan that they were told had all of that. And then they were told... well into it after it already planned everything.
Oh, really?
That they were only going to have basically half the space. So what they're actually doing next year, they're going to be in the same place, but they're going to include that downstairs area that we were.
Yeah, that would have been... They should have tried to push for that downstairs area once they found out they weren't getting the whole floor plans. I mean, if someone messes up along the line, it's easy to go, well, then you fix it. And because that was a fire hazard.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There is no way. There was only one way down. If you exonade the elevators during a fire, you have one stairs, and that was it, and I was jumping. There's a river. It might have been 20 feet, but I'm jumping.
Just go down with the ship. Start drinking the beer.
Yeah, a story to go about it.
If anything was going to catch on fire, it was going to be that crab dip, which was in these vats.
The food was awful. I didn't like any of the food. Even they looked like it was pumpkin pie sitting there, but then it was some like
it was like a quiche
kebab.
It looked just like pumpkin pie when they were taking us like that. Yeah, I thought pumpkin pie. Yeah, that's what I thought. That's weird.
And I think it was kosher though, so that's good.
Yeah, so big things of crab dip and of all things, cucumber sauce, tzatziki.
They didn't have anything.
Yeah,
there. Like all the food there was just bad.
Yeah, but it wasn't a food fest.
Yeah, still wanted some nice food. And the cheese was good.
Yeah, they did have a cheese table.
They had a nice cheese table.
I wasn't there.
Nope. You had to do kid stuff.
You had to go to soccer.
Watch soccer. Watch kids fool around with a ball and kind of sort of play soccer.
Kind of sort of play soccer is right. That's still fun. She has fun. Gets her out doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Playing it as a team. Kind of sort of. So, it's fun.
As I was walking up, as I arrived, Allie and Max were just finishing planting?
No, that stuff was planted.
Okay.
Planted a couple days ago. No, we were over a neighbor's house. They were playing and just got back. And
so what had you planted?
Just
those, a little landscaping.
Just those flowers is the only...
Well, tell... Oh, tell...
Okay. I don't know. They're yellow flowers that Heather bought. I don't know. I don't know. This. I don't see how this is interesting radio. Last year, I made that retaining wall and planted a couple boxwoods, and then this year I had a lower level that needed something, and I bought a big bag of wildflower, and I planted those.
Okay, you're right. It's not interesting. Okay.
Thanks for bringing me to this show, Greg.
Let the record show. I didn't think the story was good before I started to tell.
I thought you might, because sometimes you go off on these weird, like you'll talk all about a little project you did with some plumbing or something. Uh-huh. I thought you might go into something. But...
No, this is just so the front of the house doesn't look like shit. So it's not something I enjoy to do.
Okay.
Garden 101.
Well, okay, so we could talk to Nick about jazz.
Oh, no one wants to hear about jazz. The only people who want to hear about jazz. Yeah, the only person who wants to hear about jazz are 80-year-old men.
Well, let me ask you this question majors. Because you did mention there's classical and there's jazz.
Oh, here's a question.
I mean, there's subgenres between them all.
Okay.
But,
so maybe you know this one when WDUQ sold and whatnot. You know, Bob Studebaker, the jazz guy. What's he been doing? Do you follow up on that? No, you don't know?
Not at all.
Okay, because he was like the jazz host, you know, like, so he had a job like for like 8 hours every day playing jazz on the radio station. They sold. Now they're all NPR news talk type stuff. No more jazz except for like 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if you were in the scene and knew what Bob Studebaker was doing.
I once met the guitar player who did the guitaring for Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
About it. I was really young though.
I assume rock falls under jazz.
Huh?
Rock would fall under
yeah,
jazz.
Yeah, it's definitely, it comes down from that.
But
rock comes from, it's heavily based around blues, but blues derives from jazz. But the blues is actually a mixture of everything. Like it's hard to explain.
But the weird thing is Baroque would fall under classical.
Yeah, yeah.
But isn't rock music basically Baroque progression?
Well, it all eventually comes down from the king of Western, because we're all playing Western music.
Right.
I mean, jazz technically, if it comes from part of like, there's different, it's a mixture of everything, but a lot of it was actually African. There's different styles from Africa that bled into the culture of jazz. And then, especially when it comes into linear modals and stuff like that, but I don't want to get into that.
Let's get into
that.
No,
we get into that, stuff. That'll get
no. This is the kind of shit we get into.
We get into proper particle physics things. There's no reason why we can't get into musical theory as well.
But I don't have my notes on me. I don't. I don't want to make one wrong move and then see that comic go, and you asshole, you're gonna fail.
Oh, we.
Don't worry. That's not it. People. It's just interesting to hear. You know.
Well, I mean, but when you look down to it, every single, especially like with the rock era, Elvis is probably one of the starters of hard rock, of rock and roll to begin with, just because he took it to a more emotional, movemental level. Before that, everyone just stood there and did nothing. He was the first person to swivel his hips. And even that stuff comes from the blues, which blues just comes from a more broke down jazz part. I mean, it's just jazz, just a little bit more simplified. Blues is easy when it comes down to it, because it's just a basic chord progression, which for music people, it would be a 1-5-4, 1-4-5-6, and like those are your three chords that you're using it within a scale. So it's very easy to follow. It's very predictable. Most of the time it's in 6-8s, 3-4s, and 4-4. And rather than what jazz was known for, it's just being complicated and musicianship behind it. And you get all these different time signatures like 5-4, 13-12s, and so on and so forth. It just gets more outrageous and useless. It's fun to do, but for the most part, it's like, what the fuck? Why the hell would you put this in there? But it's all just a giant, it's an accident. It's like, scientifically, it's like evolution from it. One person accidentally hit a wrong note, which then spread it into something else. But then if you take Western, but that's all coming from the Western music design, descendants. And if you go off from there, you can go into like India and stuff like that in the Middle East, and they get some weird ass stuff that we would not know. I don't know how many notes are in their scales, but they basically have, like, we go by half steps on everything in the Western music, where it's like you have your C sharp, your D sharp, or if you want to call it E flat or D flat, but they're all the same exact notes. They have quarter notes in between them. So it's not just the C sharp, it's the perfect rate in between. But to our ears, it would be out of tune. It would sound ugly. To them, they do that, so it expands out onto it.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, just, you know, thinking what I hear of Indian, Middle Eastern music, things like that, you know, it sounds very whiny or twangy, right? With those quarter notes, it's probably just because they're not used to it.
Yeah, that's why. It's because it's just you're not used to it. They have a different styling behind. I did a couple scaling with, like, Hungarian core scales and just more Middle Eastern sounding stuff and Hindu cording scaling, and it's just it's weird. It's something that your ear has to grow accustomed to, just like we have to grow accustomed to certain things that we visually see. It's it's foreign to us, so we're not gonna accept.
Yeah, I mean that falls a lot into that conversation we had about, you know, learning to see color, you know, like where if there's not a good reason for you to discern two shades of blue, they might look the same to you, where other people, where there's a benefit, you know, they'll see, oh, obviously two different shades of blue, because they, which is, I find it so fascinating, because, you know, you just think seeing is just something that happens, right? You don't have to practice seeing. But, you know, I was listening to this one Radiolab podcast, and that's basically what it is. You know, people who are skilled in the arts can see finer gradients of differences of color than people that aren't exercising those skills. And it's the same as with tasting beer. You know, tonight on the show, you're going to hear us throw all kinds of adjectives out there describing the beer. And I used to think this when I was reading beer articles and stuff like that, like, oh, they're just making shit up now. You know, they're so descriptive. They're picking out such unique things, just trying to make a good article. But, you know, as you exercise, and you can probably appreciate this with music, right? As you practice and exercise, you pick out things that someone right beside you, you know, wouldn't notice, right? And, you know, with tasting and seeing, it just seems like, really, you don't learn that stuff. It just happens. Where, but yeah, I think it's a little more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, the problem is that we don't interpret our world through taste. We interpret our world mostly through vision and auditory stimuli, but mostly vision. So the idea that something could not, you know, that you'd be essentially blind to something which would seems to you to be something completely obvious, it's hard to take. But it's a fact of it's a fact that you've been exposed to multiple times just by looking at, say, optical illusions or those those 3D pictures that you have to, you know, twist your eyes. You can fool your eyes, and your eyes are programmed to look at things in a very specific way. And if you mess with that program, or you do something that program is not used to, it's not going to know how to interpret that.
Well, it's the perfect thing of, like, when you look at a monkey, every monkey looks exactly the same to mm-hmm. us. However, to them, or someone who grew up, say, like, raising monkey farms or whatever over in, somewhere in, like, South Africa, they're going to look different to each other. Yeah. Same exact thing with dogs. I mean, a pit may look like a pit down the line, but someone who's been around pits for their entire life will be able to distinguish between two dogs. It's just all that whole... That's why humans... It's a little bit racial, but mm-hmm. why, like, somewhere like having like a white ethnic, we would say we all look different.
Yeah,
but the Chinese will all look the same. It's the same exact thing along those lines. It's just mm-hmm. different characteristics behind it with what you're familiar with.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just as you say, and I think you make a good point. It's not just a matter of vision. It's a matter of our brain's ability to select differences and to highlight differences. And it will only do that when it feels there's a need to do that. And it will selectively ignore extra information that's there simply to make processing an easier
right.
job on it. So it's not that those monkeys don't look different to you, it's just that you just don't even notice it. You don't even notice their differences.
Or the Chinese. I don't think they all look the same. Yeah. I fully do not. That was just for argumentative sake. That was devil's advocate.
You're not going to get hate tweets.
You're not going to get hate tweets, Hong Kong.
Because it comes from a very real. It comes from a very real place. I mean, everyone has had those situations where everyone looks the same, or everything here looks the same, and people don't realize how much it is your brain just saying, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to these sorts of things right now. And you have to be educated in something in order to do it. That, in a weird way, that comes almost all the way back into what I wanted to talk about with you, which is with Dungeons and Dragons and how we're doing it. And how all the characters...
I got my 20-sided guy.
Well, I do, actually. my characters have proficiencies. Like, my character's a proficiency in spellcrafting. So, if we're passing by something, my character may be able to notice something in-game that the other characters may not, simply because of his education, how he's been trained. So that is accounted for in the game. That's sort of why I find D&D so much fun, because all these things can be accounted for.
Yeah.
You're not really mm-hmm. limited.
There's one more note I wanted to add on to the visual eye thing, since we were going into it. I did some studying of, like, Mandarin and stuff like that, and the language of it. And a lot of people...
Not the oranges?
No, not the oranges. And a lot of the people that I can't distinguish between...
Not the Iron Man 3 villain?
Between, the Korean written language, Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese. They can't really distinguish between those. And... it's something that you have to practice and become familiar with. It's the same exact thing with also identifying people from different Asian mm-hmm. cultures. It's like, once I was actually able to, and this is going to sound so racist again, but once I was able to distinguish between a Korean, a Japanese, a Chinese, I was so proud of myself, because I know they wouldn't get pissed off at me, because if you call a Korean person Chinese, man, they fucking hate you. I mean,
the only problem you have there is you realize they're Korean. You go, hey, you're Korean. They're like, no, I'm American, you know?
Well, you don't do that. I'm not like I'm going into every single Korean shop.
You're Korean.
However, the one time when I did go into a Chinese restaurant and the dude was Japanese, I was a little disappointed. Mm. However, but it's the same exact thing with Europe. If you grew up in Europe, you're able to tell which sections of like country they're coming from before they even speak most of the time. Mm-hmm. You can just tell by the way they look, the way they're dressed. I can't really tell that. I can tell a Frenchie apart, but that's probably because I studied French. But that's about it. And mm-hmm. then in the English and everything, but it just becomes more difficult, especially when you move to Eastern Europe, between like Bulgaria, the Ukraine, Bosnia. I can't really tell them apart. At least not till they open their mouths, and then half of them sound Russian to me.
You mentioned Mandarin.
I got a bunch of them that live by me. That whole section, I have like, it switches all over the place. I do know one Bulgarian word, and that is Zednik, which means asshole.
Yeah, that's about all I can say. Uduse bakayaro, which is shut up, motherfucker, in Japanese.
Va te faire foutre is basically like go fuck yourself in French.
I notice now some people will look at some, if there's script, some sort of Asian language, I'll be able to tell whether it's Japanese, Chinese, or Korean, but other people won't. And for me, it's fairly obvious, but only because I've been exposed to it.
Yeah, that's the same exact thing.
Other
for
people
me.
Like, it's just, is that Chinese? Like, no, it's obviously Korean. Look at it. And they're like, what?
I mean, I can somewhat see a little bit of the Japanese and the Chinese confusion, just because some of the, because Japanese Chinese, they have similar on the basic part of the writing. I can't really read Chinese or Japanese.
I can't read it.
I can recognize symbols, though. I can recognize, be like, oh, that's a symbol for person. That's a symbol for hand. That's about it. I studied it for like a year by myself, so I don't remember a thing. I think I can go there, ask someone their name, and like say goodbye.
Can't you read that?
No, I can.
They said he was studying Chinese, not Japanese.
Yeah, but no, like you can catch some of the symbols that are the same. That's about it.
He's showing him Fred's beer store flyer that he grapevined the other day.
He's an old Japanese dude. It's pretty cool.
He's not Japanese.
He kind of looks at though. He's squinting.
Just make
that
the brochure.
Is so racist.
They Photoshop the squinting to make him more palatable in the Japanese market.
I thought he was. I thought we were gonna like see the Karate Kid there, but that's Chinese. Still, I am not a racist.
This is what the place looks like. I didn't even show you. This is what the place looks like from the inside.
I think
actually, who am I kidding? Every single person, every person in the world is a little bit racist.
I showed pictures, yeah.
You showed me photos when you came back from Japan.
Okay, next is Tart of Darkness. So this is a sour stout aged in oak barrels.
Thank you.
It's not too high in alcohol. It's only about 5.6, but...
Pour gently, in case there's a bunch of yeast at the bottom.
That's not... Yeah. See how you like this.
Enjoy.
All right, thank you.
Probably haven't had anything like this before.
That's a nice scent.
Mm-hmm. This is a pretty different beer from...
So good.
Ooh.
A little bit of sweet tarts in there.
Yeah, it was very...
There's a little bit of like...
Sour, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's tangy and tart like sweet tarts, but...
Yeah.
Even behind that, I don't remember noticing before. I'm getting a bit of a bourbon-y barrel character outfit also. I mean, it is barrel-aged, but before I didn't notice the bourbon, and I took a sip. I'm like, that's a nice little play, the tangy sweet tarts and the bourbon.
That's definitely a very... it has a unique flavor to it.
It's mostly, I think, lactic acid... I think from the taste, it's almost entirely lactic, right?
Eh, it's a blend of things, but the...
I feel like I'm popping a sweet tart into my mouth every time I take a sip.
I mean, it's probably more of a Flanders blend. So, I mean, lactic's in there, but, you know, Flanders blend's a little bit of wild yeast, a little bit of bacteria. It's doing all kinds of things.
So it's not like Brett, though.
There is a little Brett in a Flanders Brett blend, but you got some acetobacter, you got some lactobacillus, you got... some of the wild yeast, things like that. So, all kinds of things coming together to make an outstanding beer. The brewery's named The Brewery. It's spelled a little bit differently. It's named after Patrick Rue's last name. R-U-E is B-R-U-E-R-Y. And they're in Orange County, California. And they're only a few years old. And they're one of the rock stars. I was going to throw a musical thing out there and name a really big band, and I just fell flat.
Zeppelin?
So. Well, that's
we're going too big. We're going Deep Purple.
Zeppelin's kind of Sierra Nevada, as much as I love Deep right? Because they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
Are we talking a newer band? So we're going Jonas Brothers.
No, because new but quality.
So,
Black Keys?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, well, actually, Black Keys aren't really new. They've been around since around the millennium, at least.
No, that's okay.
They're just starting to, they're doing arenas
that's
now.
That's too bad you said Zeppelin before, because I was going to throw a question at you, but now, well, I'll throw it at you anyway. I was going to say, the Pixies or Led Zeppelin?
Not Led Zeppelin.
Yes!
He already knows that I don't like music.
Yeah, but then again, you gotta. The argue goes, I mean, for true music fans, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin. I don't know, half the time I go Deep Purple.
I never got that much into Deep Purple.
Deep Purple's awesome. Ian Gillan's vocals are incredible. But Led Zeppelin, as much as I do love, and I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan, one of the biggest ripoff bands in the world.
Well, sure.
I mean, all their stuff was just completely ripped off to where they even got sued for Dazed and Confused because it was such an identical copy. I still love you, Jimmy Page. If you are listening,
he's not listening.
Play, yeah, they're basically a cover, please come play with me, and not that way.
A cover band that made it huge.
A cover band that made it huge.
One of the best concerts.
I mean, he was a phenomenal studio musician before he even made it big. He made it around 24, I think, is when he created Led Zeppelin, because he was a huge studio guy. Wasn't known at all. Just did studio work.
So John Paul Jones on the Zuma tour at Rosebud was amazing.
Yeah,
best concerts I've been to. He's playing with a couple guys from King Crimson.
Oh, okay.
I don't know King Crimson all that well, but he's playing with two guys from King Crimson. And...
yeah, I don't know too much from King's Crimson. I've listened to their stuff. I didn't buy any of their stuff. I'm one of the few of the new generation that does not download his music. I still buy vinyl, which I couldn't do for the longest time because they weren't making them. Now they're making them again, which is awesome. Vinyl's so good. The quality of it's just so much more crisp, and it's not even saying that just to be a hipster douchebag. Like, the truth of the matter,
not just to be a hipster douchebag.
A little bit. I mean, I have my beanie in my car.
It, but the
truth of it is, though, like, I have a perfect example. I have the Scorpions Blackout album, which I don't know if you. I know you're not into music all that much, but it's an incredible album. 1981, 82, somewhere around there. But my dad had that on vinyl. The original pressing of it too. I took my Blackout CD a couple years ago, listened to it from start to finish. I took his Blackout album, listened to it from start to finish. And I can hear things that you cannot hear on the CD.
I'm sure.
And you think like, oh, maybe it's because I'm listening to it multiple times. No, I'm even going back to the CD and listening to the CD part.
Trying to find it,
and you cannot hear it. It gets washed away. Rather than, you figure records are more direct contact. It's coming straight off the reel-to-reel, at least back then.
Well, right. And there's no compression at all.
There's no compression. There's, I mean, it's just direct.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the CD is it's almost certainly not lossless, right?
I mean, it's not compressed like an MP3, but I do believe it cuts out. It doesn't have
it doesn't have
an infinite tail off on it, right? Yeah. It actually has, at a certain point, there's almost so like a noise gate on it, right? So
It's just... But you can't get rid of the whole convenience of a CD. So I think that's why record sales have gone up substantially within the past year. I think it's because now when you buy the record, they give you an MP3 downloadable version of it for free. You pay $20, but technically you're getting two CDs. You're getting the vinyl, which comes with all the beautiful artwork, all the whole memoir of it, and you get to listen to it at your house, which is what I love to do. I don't watch TV. I listen to music all day and all night. And then you get the portable one that you can just download straight onto your iPod.
Well, it's a lot like the taste situation earlier, or the quarter notes, right? You're noticing things that most people don't notice. Wouldn't notice.
Most people just
and so
on the radio.
For most people, the CD to vinyl thing is something that is not a concern.
Yep. And that's the sad part. That's why it'll never make it big again, and that's why the music industry will never make it big. But it's also because the record labels themselves destroyed themselves. They would find one thing, and it started in the 80s. I love 80s music. I love White Line. I'm a Poison fan. I don't think they're great musicians, but they're a fun band to see. But when these bands were making it big, every single record label went out there and bought a million of these bands and made them look like chicks and did everything to the complete glamtastic that they were. Right. And then they had that taper off, and they grabbed onto the grunge scene. Then every band after 1992 was just like Pearl Jam, just like Nirvana, mm-hmm. and Soundgarden, and it just kept on going and going and going until they tapered off.
Mm-hmm.
My bad.
Sorry.
Until they tapered off as well. And then the same exact thing happened with the rap scene. Rap became huge. They over-publicized, made it just unbelievably huge, and then it destroyed itself. And now they just run out of ideas, and especially with the uprising of the internet, it's hard for them to even make a living now because they're not putting anything on quality that no one really wants to buy. They're all worried about the single, which the single gets bought, but you're not selling the record, and most of the people download it,
mm-hmm.
even though downloading has gone down within the past few years.
I'm probably an odd duck, you know, like even on Spotify, I only listen to albums. I have no really urge to listen to like singles or anything like that, you know. Like on Spotify particularly, I go to the Rolling Stones section and they have, you know, recent albums there. And so I just, you know, there's a whole bunch of people that I've never heard of. I just kind of mm-hmm. listen through things. Every once in a while I'll find something really good. I wish they would give me like the description, you know, it's just this review all about it. And you like have to read and read and read just to figure out what genre this band is, you know, because if it's R&B, I really don't want to listen to it, you know? So.
That's another problem with today. And there's a guitar player, Guthrie. He's from England. He's a phenomenal guitar player. He's world renowned within the being a studio man and a live hire and stuff like that. Great guy. And he did a, guitar clinic, which is basically he shows up and talks about how to play and like teaches you to a mass wide audience. And we were having a conversation prior to his him starting the show, and we were talking about the ridiculousness of just the fact that there's so many genres now. Like, look at rock and roll. It started off as rock, and now we have everything going into pop rock, grunge rock, mm-hmm. Metal, glam rock, glam metal. Then even from metal, you have death metal, black metal, hardcore metal. And it's like, oh no, that's not a death metal band. That's actually black Norwegian death metal band. And there's like so many different subgenres. But in the end, weren't we just supposed to just play music? But now everyone's so worried. What genre are they? Oh, they're not cool unless they're this genre. And it's not. It's basically just about the image now. And like I said, this has just been a rolling snowball since the 80s. Mm-hmm. Once it became about the image, it's no longer about... TV killed all that stuff. Like, it really did. TV killed a lot of musicianship and a lot of actually just showing up and playing shows. Because now you have to... Which I'm fine with that. I love showmanship. I love people that move around, that jump around and stuff like that. But they became it to where it's like a giant Madonna everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have no problem with Madonna. I will listen to Madonna. I don't care. When I'm in a good mood, I'll put Madonna on. She makes me feel all bubbly. But it's just like, do you follow what I'm saying, mm-hmm. though?
Sure.
Where it comes down to this whole awful, just corporate pushing everything on you. And then this is what's, and then everyone always trying to find a new thing of being cool, a new hipster way of being cool by saying, oh, well, since this is hardcore metal was big around 2004. And then it became all about, like, the Norwegian black metal. And then it just keeps going all over the place. And no one really cares to the fact that it's all basically the same exact
stuff.
Well,
here's the way it works. Money kills art.
Oh, yeah.
And it does it slowly. And the more money, the more killing power. Money will kill craft beer. If craft beer gets to 30 to 40%. Money kills everything you love. Money destroyed community. Because they had to get the money, and they figured the best way to get that money was to get Dan Harmon out of there and destroy the show that way. Money has its purposes. Money is incredibly useful. Everyone wants more of it. It still has a deleterious effect on the arts. I'm trying
to figure out how to you know talk about this because I want to explore the money will kill craft beer. I'm trying to look at some of the parallels of exploding over publicizing some music genre, grunge for example. Mm-hmm. Let's look at grunge. You know, it started out really small, and you know that was the craft beer, right? And then it got super popular. I'm trying to think of something a little bit closer that, you know, has had the same kind of explosion, you know.
PBR.
It's a hipster douchebag.
Yeah. PBR is still a little piece of shit.
I hate PBR. Yeah.
No.
PBR ain't doing anything like this.
I'm just trying to think how... I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just trying to see how it would play out and, like, how maybe it wouldn't kill it. But maybe what you mean by kill is most people who aren't the music geeks, the beer geeks, you know, will drink or consume, you know, something that's not as good as it used to be, right?
And the industry will move to fill in the... There will be a lot of people trying to cannibalize that space. And so the great stuff will always exist on the periphery of whatever is the big piece of the bell curve.
The signal, the noise ratio is going to be a lot. There's going to be a whole bunch of crap to sort through to find the really good stuff. I can see that happen. I mean, yeah, I can definitely see that happening.
But even now, though, it happens. I mean, good stuff gets through even the worst. Like, for example, Hoo Garden is we always come back to that as an example of a fantastic beer that from a giant company and through all the corporate bullshit it has to go through, it still makes it out as a fantastic beer. And for all the terrible things, you know, that HBO does, you still get to watch Game of Thrones. There's good things come. Good things.
The books were better.
the books were better.
But HBO's not. You know, it's not.
No,
they have a lot more artistic. You know, they keep their artistic a lot more than network and advertiser driven things.
And there are hardened music stuff, but there are still good artists that are signed to big labels.
But you can also argue with that HBO thing. They added a. They have to add sex to everything.
Yeah,
it's like okay. If I want to watch
things better,
yeah. If I want to watch porn, I'll watch porn. Like I don't want to watch like a whole episode of Game of Thrones where it's like, all right, watch these people fuck.
It can be sometimes more obvious than it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean Game of Thrones, some of them.
Particularly the novels themselves were kind of soaked with sex, and they were actually soaked with even more food than they were anything else. That was mostly led to this huge amount of food porn.
Yeah,
they're probably the book is like I don't know 2,000 pages or something.
Yeah, on that. Well, the first two are like 1,500 or so, and then they start getting like 2,000, 2,500, whatever.
I assume you could fill 30 or 40 pages with just the descriptions of food.
Yeah.
In the 2,000-page book.
Martin is the food of Tolkien.
Yeah.
Instead of spending 3 pages for a blade of grass, he spends it 3 pages on a vine of grapes.
It's like in a recent episode, and you don't watch the show yet, but you have, you're going to. There's a brief mention of lemon cakes, and lemon cakes is huge thing.
That's only mentioned. I want to eat lemon cakes every time I read the book. Yeah. Sitting there like, ooh, I got to go to China and get some lemon cakes.
I heard an interesting thing about the books and how, you know, from the beginning, it's kind of like Genesis, just building everything. It's not just the civilization, but I guess it's the world and the laws and the physics and the magic.
There's world building. You have to do a world. You have to set up your.
But isn't it kind of like? Is it just discovery of that, or is it actually the instantiation of those?
It starts in media res. It very much starts in the middle of the story. You don't. Okay. There's not a.
It starts right at the main plot.
Yeah.
Right. That's where. Especially the first chapter, which Game of Thrones did. The first season was almost identical to the book. They added some characters and took out some things, but it was very minor. I would say 85% of it was followed the book perfectly. Yeah. And it just starts you off going straight into what's going to go on, and then you're like, holy shit, what next episode? Or turn the next chapter and stuff like that. So it grabs you right away. But every book or every story, every video game, every movie, you're learning as you go. So you learn more cities and more leaders and more important characters as you go. But that's
and historical
the
events.
And historical events. Yeah. And they go back to talking about the history. Like, you hear about the Mad King and the Targaryens and all that stuff. But you don't really... You hear that they're bad at the beginning. And then you start to unravel their story. You really start to unravel it in the third season or third book. I mean, it really starts to break down on what's going on with every of that.
Yeah, but the first season, the first book is essentially world building. They have to establish the location. They have established really three things. That they establish the, well, four things. That they have established the location. They have to establish the characters. They have to establish the world in which they live. So like the general rules of reality and the way things generally work in the society, and then they have to establish the tone. And the first book is very good at doing all four of those.
I still love the first book so much. I mean, yes, Storm of Swords, incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, just that's just a mind-blowing thing that goes on. But the first book really takes the tone of everything. Like, you realize, I mean, Martin has been around for how many years before he even wrote Game of Thrones?
Yeah, he did the Beauty and the Beast TV show. Did you know that?
Before, oh, no.
Did Game of Thrones?
Oh, I did not.
Yep.
I actually, sad to say, as much as I, like, my favorite author is Dennis L. McKieran, who's wrote some phenomenal stuff, and one of his trilogies was The Iron Tower, and I've been a huge, like, nerd fan on fantasy and everything. I had never heard of George R. R. Martin until the season of Game of Thrones. I'd never heard
of him. Yeah, I hadn't heard of him either.
And then once I heard that, I was like, all right, I gotta read these. And then I pushed off watching the show for like a year and a half until I finished a couple books at school and like actual like hobby books I wanted to read beforehand before I even got to them. And then I was like, all right, fine, I'll watch the show while I'm reading them. And they're just, it's an incredible story.
And the show serves as a very good sort of companion piece to the book. It has some additional scenes. It has some scenes where, you know, cut out for time, but give some face to the characters. Some things are a little different. But it's there are different mediums, and they're two different sort of takes on the same story, and they work in concert with each other, I think.
Yeah, and I won't spit any spoilers out, but like some of the things that even the TV show adds are for the better, like the Joffrey scene where in the season 3, if you can catch my part, I just did a signal that would spoil it, but we won't go into that.
Well, there's
that adds in a whole different depth of King Joffrey.
Not even that, but what they've done, for example, to Lady Margaery, who's sort of a peripheral character in the books, but she's a real force to be reckoned with in the show, and it adds more to that character, and it's something that's not there in the books, but you can tell that it works in the story, and you know it makes it, it's better for being there.
Yep.
I finished The Americans.
Okay.
Tore through that in like a week.
I haven't seen The Americans.
I haven't seen it either. Is that JFK thing?
No, it's set in 1981, and it's about the deep cover KGB spies living in America as Americans.
Okay.
And so it's about their spy work, but it's also about they're a husband and wife, or they're a man and a woman paired together as a husband and wife, but they're not married, and they have two kids, you know, for their cover. And it's about them living in America and seeing how great America can be, but they're doing spy work, and they're doing some pretty, pretty dirty spy work. And it's an FX show, and it's really,
I saw that on really the Anderson good. Cooper show, where I watched that religiously, him and Alan. I just love daytime television, but, he had them on there. That's why they were, okay. I think that, correct me if I'm wrong. Well, you won't be able to, but apologize if I'm wrong. I think that came out the same exact time where, I don't remember what channel, it might have been History or something. They put out a controversial JFK miniseries or something like that. I can't remember what that was called.
Was something, some sort of JFK miniseries. It was like a 6-episode
miniseries.
But I think it was only controversial because it was bad. I don't think it was controversial.
I don't know. I remember hearing about it all through my daytime television, always talking about it, and then Ellen said it was good, so it had to have been good.
Yeah. The Americans, it was 13 episodes. First three or four were really good. There was a little bit of lull mid-season, and then like the last two really stepped it up again. So,
well, you have all the Game of Thrones episodes, so you should watch that. Mm-hmm. I understand why you may be a little bit reluctant, because there are three seasons of it, and maybe you just don't want to get pulled into it. Because
it's 30 hours almost.
Yeah, because you feel that.
I'll start it. I just, you know, I'm not, you're going to hate me, but I'm not a fan of fantasy. and I don't know, CIA.
I'm out of here.
CIA spy stuff sounded a lot more intriguing to me. So
I go all over the place. I'm not strictly fantasy. Sure, I play D&D, but that's only because my father made me play it when I was 10 years old, or else I'd get beaten. Like, come on.
I'm not a big fan of fantasy. I don't read a lot of fantasy novels. I did not watch Game of Thrones, and, you know, or like you, I hadn't heard about it until my sister was started to tweet about it, and she tweeted about how amazing episode 9 was, and I thought of the first season. That's where a particular plot event happens, and I didn't know what the event was, but I thought, you know what? This is some sort of fantasy thing. Still in my lost mindset, thinking, you know, they probably found like a plane, and that's the big, you know,
they found a plane.
Yeah,
they found a 747 in the Middle Earth.
I then learned later, no, that's not. This is what the twist was, and I thought, oh, okay. Well, I didn't understand why that was a big deal, and then I watched it, and I was like, oh, this is really, really good. Besides being, you know, it takes some of those genre conventions that you and I probably don't like as much, and turns them on its head, or does them well enough that you don't mind.
I mean, just because I play D&D doesn't mean that I'm a fantasy nerd.
A few minutes ago you were a fantasy nerd.
Oh, so. I am. I love fantasy, but I just love any good novel. But like one of my favorite books is The Flately Enigma, which is I can't even pronounce the guy's name because he's from Iceland, and it was an English rewrite of it, and it's just phenomenal. If you ever get a chance, check it out. It takes place in 1960 on a little Icelandic island. It's a whole murder mystery, amazing twist, brutal descriptions. It's a great book. It's one of my favorites of all time. It's still fiction, but I also read a lot of biographies. I've read, I could talk to you for hours about the Duff McKagan, Tony Iommi, Sammy Hagar. Like, I read the Zeppelin biographies.
The Duff McKagan biography.
That was a great book. I haven't read the Slash one yet. I do plan on it. I don't care to read Axl Rose because I think he's a pretentious douchebag. But I won't get into that because, Axl, you're a douche.
He listens, so.
Okay, so what is fascinating about Duff McKagan?
He was in Guns N' Roses. Well, what isn't fascinating?
Okay, so, you know, guitar player who...
He was a bass player.
That's right. Bass player who, you know, did a ton of blow and screwed a bunch of chicks. What else?
He wrote a lot of the songs for GNR. And he wrote a lot of the main riffs, like Paradise City, one of their biggest hits. He wrote that all before he was even in the band. Okay. I mean, it's the whole history of it. Same thing with a bit like Tony Iommi. I mean, he created heavy metal.
I used to be a big, I mean, I don't know, I didn't know all the back story, but I was a huge, I was at the perfect age, right? 1991 when, or 88 to 91 when GNR was huge, you know, it was just at the teenage years where I could start listening to my own music, and that was the bad band, you know, and yeah, so that was like my first favorite band was Guns N' Roses.
I mean, Axl was cool up until 91. And then he just became an idiot. Especially what he did for the, like, all right, I'm not a big fan of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame out in Cleveland and everything. I agree with Eddie Trunk when he says it's the Hall of Shame. But what Axl did for, like, I thought he was going to be cool about it. He's like, nah, I'm not showing up for that. I don't care about that reward, is what he said. He's like, I don't want to be involved with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, well, that's rock and roll, dude. Way to be, like, a badass and be like, nah, I don't want your invite to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Well, then later on it turned out he wasn't showing up because Duff McKagan, Slash, and all of them were showing up because he just wanted to be the only one inducted. Well, you know what? Go do some more crazy-ass cocaine and get your whatever you do and get your, like, little cornrows back, you little ginger piece of shit. Like, come on. What do you mean? No one cares about GNR anymore. No one cares that it's just Axl Rose with the name. Who gives a damn? Axl Rose, you can't even sing. Like, come on. He's a horrible singer. But it was cool back in 88 because he was so bad, it was good. But now he's just bad.
I mean, I still Slash still puts out some great music. Duff McKagan still puts out some great music. His last album, Duff McKagan's Loaded, was an incredible album.
I had his first solo.
What do you think of Chinese Democracy?
Yeah, get that. Alright, like, I'll give you of course Appetite. Appetite for Destruction, hands down, obviously their best album, really their only good album. But then I'll give you Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. That is it. I won't give you no Spaghetti Incident or whatever that whatever that one was in, what, 98, 99?
Since I was still a fan, you know, yes, I had the Spaghetti Incident, and no matter how many times I listened to it, I just never liked it. You know, I just never came around to it.
Bad. I mean, everyone has a bad album. Well, not everyone, but that was just bad. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking. And then same sort of thing with Chinese Democracy. How many years did they take to write that album? It sucked.
Yeah.
Like, everyone put, like, oh, so this is going to be the greatest album ever. And it was, like, basically African Child from that movie, Get Him to the Greek, if you've seen that at all. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
No.
You've seen that? That's a great movie. I mean, where it's just so horrible. I don't want to say it's horrible. No, Axl, you suck. I can't stand Axl Rose. I really can't.
It's on the record.
I will still listen to Appetite for Destruction, but that's about it. And
Dr. Nick Jones.
I got to the point where, you know, I listened to Appetite so much that I needed almost like 10 years off of the album. And, you know, now I listen to it again. I'm like, no, it's a bit nostalgia. It's a bit not... When something is overplayed, I just can't do it. Yeah. You know?
Well, I always skip Sweet Child of Mine, Paradise City, and Welcome but you know, to the like Jungle. Recently, what, I Night like, Train.
But recently, I listened to Paradise City for the first time in quite a while, and you know, it was maybe
I
not fresh
still do
again.
Paradise.
But...
I can still do Paradise. I can't do Welcome, and I can't do Sweet Child of Mine.
Okay. Yeah, Night Train, Mr. Brownstone.
Well, Sweet Child of Mine. It's a terrible song. Built on...
It's not a terrible song. It's not a terrible song. It's a great ballad. You can't give that... It's horrible. It's actually... It's fairly well written and everything. Even though Slash, I'm pretty sure when I read this, it was built on a gimmick.
Yeah, it's built on a pick progression thing that he was doing. He was just like...
Yeah, I think it was... I don't even want to get into it because I'm probably going
to
be wrong.
I'm not saying it's not a catchy song or a song that's fun to listen to, but I just don't think it's a very good song.
But why?
Because it's one of those songs that's just simple repeat of the same progression and then delve into...
What do you think the Kinks did?
the same thing.
What do you think Elvis did? What do you think B.B. King did? Which I'm wearing, by the way.
Yeah. There was some...
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
You're making a good point. I don't have the descriptor for it because I'm not a music guy. But
it sells records.
Yeah.
If they didn't want to sell, they would be doing stuff that Miles Davis did. Back that Joe Pesh did. I mean, back then it was, sure they had their structure, but it was a little bit more erotic all the way through. A little bit more stimulating because it wasn't the same repeats.
Was that the Step Brothers where they did the sing-along of Sweet Child of Mine? Is Adam Scott?
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
There's been so many different covers, especially that one girl in Big Daddy who covered Sweet Child of Mine. Go to hell. Don't do that. That was bad.
One girl in Big Daddy.
I don't know her name. She did a cover of Sweet Child of Mine that was in the movie Big Daddy. And...
Sheryl Crow, you're not talking about that one, right?
Was it
Sheryl Crow covered it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Go to hell! All right, that was horrible. Don't cover them. All right, stay away from that. No one covers GNR because no one does it like they do.
Cover the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, go ahead, do that. Do anything from Jesus Christ Superstar for all I care. Just don't cover that.
Yeah, I broke out Use Your Illusion 1 not too long ago. Remembered some songs on there that I hadn't heard in quite a while, like Garden of Eden. You don't forget Coma, but...
How long are we going? Because I didn't want to bring up something, but I'm going to maybe save that for the post.
Yeah, we are at... Where's the... Counter at 58:46.
All right, I'll save this for...
just a little teaser, I guess.
Okay, I asked Jeff this via text message because
the riddle. Okay,
I had this in my head and sort of wanted to talk about it, but I wanted to remember it. So the question was, how did the telephone change language? And I guess we can talk about that.
Oh, see, when you say it out loud, see, when I read it, it sounded like a riddle. It sounded like, I inserted like a change its language or something like that. No, how did the telephone change language?
Post show.
Okay.
Save
well, okay, we'll make it for the post show. Because I have some good argument for, I was almost an English major. I was this close to being an English major. So I have some good arguments for this.
I mean, I don't think it's an argument. I think it changed language in a huge way.
No, but that's what I mean. Changing of it. Just good points.
Yeah.
I should say.
All right.
Well thought of.
Let's go drink some beer.
Beer.